Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never, as you hopefully are coming to the awareness of this awful state that we find ourselves in regarding our government. It's time to start doing something, folks. And I hate to even put it that lackadaisically, but I mean, something's better than what you're doing now. I know plenty of you are trying to do things, but this is where it comes down to a lack of understanding and how to be effective and what you can do to actually, you know, get something done. Now, I was in a conversation prior to my trip to Montana with a gentleman who is involved in Red Pill Expo and all of that. And he was telling me how he had created this forum for his Republican Central Committee, got a lot of people out there, well over 100 people, watching 2,000 Mules and watching another exposure type of video film. And I believe they were actually showing this in a movie theater. So it was a pretty good attendance. And at the very end, he got up in the stage and he basically told everybody that, you know, we're in this situation because we're not doing something about it. We have to do something about it. And not that I disagree with him, but the problem is when you stand up in front of the audience that, you know, if you're leading your county, if you're in front of a group of patriots and you say, you got to do something, if you're not going to tell them, if you can't connect the dots in what they need to do, then don't poke them in the eye and tell them they got to do something. You have to understand what some of the most effective tools that we have, and you have to explain them to them so that they can actually start using these tools. I mean, nobody knows what to do. We've all been indoctrinated. I think we all have too much, let's just say, when we go in front of people, sometimes we make the mistake of thinking that they know what we know. And I'm here to tell you they don't. I'm here to tell you that, you know, they care, they love the country, they love the Constitution, they know things are wrong, they know this stuff isn't right, but they don't know why, what, how, when, where. They don't know that stuff. And there's too many of us that just take it for granted of what we do know and what nobody else knows. So how fair are you if you're going to stand up in front of people and point your finger of judgment at them and say, you know, you've got to do something. It's your fault. It's our fault. We all have to act. Well, that makes you feel better, and that may make them feel bad, but that doesn't get anything done. So what we did, and actually I wanted to prove this point because I had told this gentleman, I said, you know, because I explained to him a little while ago, the power of the First Amendment and actually having petitions and so forth and getting people to understand and to get engaged using First Amendment petitions and holding government accountable and basically activating the immune system of our government requires activating the people to act in demanding compliance and going attacking all things that are not in compliance. And so as this gentleman, you know, I talked to him, and it had been a good month later, and he said, nothing happened. Nobody did anything. And I go, well, what was your expectations? I wanted to see people get engaged, you know, start getting active, getting out there and you know, supporting candidates. And I'm going, well, you know, everybody's tired of that. Everybody is tired. I mean, it's one thing if you got a candidate that is a lightning rod for the Constitution, like Paul Venable. I mean, come on. Folks, when you've got somebody that is speaking strictly Constitution, left, right, and center, then you've got a candidate that you need to get behind, especially when they say, we have to start enforcing every part of the Constitution. We can't just, be sensitive about the Second Amendment. We have to be sensitive about every part of that compact. And so, because I can tell you, folks, there's some animosity even amongst the Patriot movements. You know, there's the Second Amendment, folks. That's a big part of the movement, right? And there's some people that, they just don't like the Second Amendment, folks, because, they basically marginalize some of these other really important things. And I've said this before. Are you really that moral when you're stepping across, the perversion that's happening to the children of America? That the racism and the indoctrination of our children and or the abortions and the killings of babies? I mean, we could just go over all sorts of moral turpitude that the federal government is guilty of executing. And, the Second Amendment folks, they just step right over all these things. They bypass them. They turn their backs on all these things and say, well, at least we got our guns. We're going to keep our guns. Really? As patriots, we can't allow ourselves to get caught up like this. We can't allow ourselves to be divided over all of these myopic issues. We have to unite. We need to convince these folks that their guns may be important, but it's no more important than your individual liberty and your individual sovereignty. And don't think that you're going to be able to thwart, some attack by the globalists. Your guns are not equal to the intelligence, the sensor systems. I mean, the havoc and the armament that they can, just lay upon you. I mean, folks, this is not the Revolutionary War times where everybody has muskets and you stand out there and you take your shots. No. We're not going to survive any type of that, deadly force conflict. I mean, we may take a few with us, and I think it's important that we die fighting. But I'm here to tell you, you're making a huge mistake if you think you're going to win some war. We need to put that out of our mind. Even the Lord knew we wouldn't be able to do that, which is why he gave us everything in the Constitution, not just the Second Amendment. So, and the most important part is Article 7 in understanding what the Constitution is. Because once you understand that the Constitution is a compact and the states are the only parties to it, once you get there from Article 7, now you can actually start holding every part of the compact, against the federal government, say you're not abiding by the compact. You're violating this, that, and the other thing. So anyway, let's kind of get back to where we were, because one of the things I wanted to get back into is what happened in Montana. And and I'm telling you folks, this is awesome. I don't want you to think I'm coming across poking any of these folks in the eyes. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. The problem is that we're just not equally informed. There's problems that these people, there are people that have dove into, and I'll go back to, parental rights and health freedom and so forth. These folks are starting to get and starting to understand, what the Constitution really says, but in some ways, they haven't gotten there yet. But what we have is we have people that are now getting motivated because it's directly affecting them in a way that they're not going to tolerate it anymore. The fact is, folks, that you can't just stop if all of a sudden you feel like you're getting some relief because, now you don't have to wear masks at school. That doesn't mean you let up. Just because, they can't force you, they're not going to have vaccination passports, doesn't mean you should be letting up. They still have this paradigm that they have the authority to do and force you into anything and everything they possibly can. We have to take a stand. Now, one thing before we get into break, one thing I want to remind you of, Constitution Association, Douglas V. Gibbs's Constitution Association in Southern California is having their annual dinner conference gala. If you're in that area, call, find out where they are, and go online because they're selling the tickets online. And so I wish I would have had the tickets and so forth, but I just know about it and I haven't had the time to do it because I've been busy, folks. But if you want to attend and be focused on the Constitution, on Constitution Day, and you're living in Southern California, I can't understand why this event isn't sold out, especially under the Biden administration with the level of tyranny and everything else. I can tell you what's happening in that area. We used to live in that area. We're refugees from that area. And we saw this happening. We saw that they were building this, you know, this no-income housing, this sustainable housing that they were building in Murrieta, Temecula, Wildomart, and all those little communities in the Temecula Valley. And they're saying, okay, if you're going to build any housing, if you're going to have apartments, they have to be sustainably. And that's because federal money came in. And what they did was they moved BLM, or I should say, people out of LA inner cities that were BLM charged. This was all politically done. You can't tell me that they didn't do this deliberately to inject, you know, hardcore leftist activists out into these very conservative communities and now start creating fear and threatening people. Because, see, out there in that little bedroom community, people felt safe because, oh, well, I don't live in LA, so we won't see that. And now they exported it into your home. They're going to do the same thing in your rural areas as if they get away with putting up any of these types of sustainable, you know, apartments and housing. They'll pipe them out of the metropolises and out into your communities. Folks, we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Excuse me, I just had to cough. So getting back to, you know, what we've been talking about and where we're going, what we have to do is start putting aside our, let's just say, our hardcore, ardent feelings for a very topic under the Constitution. We have to understand that the whole Constitution, when we are in full compliance, it allows us to have a free society and allows us to become an enlightened society. When we're allowed to have open and honest discussions regarding life and the creation of life in the education system, and how it all began, when we're allowed to have open conversation. Because right now, folks, that ain't happening. Our school systems have been shut and they've been closed to the progressive narrative. And so we're getting what we sow. If you really want to make a difference, then what we have to do is we have to put aside our differences and embrace the Constitution in its entirety. I'm not telling you that you have to abandon your organization, but the bottom line is, and the one thing I said on Saturday that actually came back to me from several folks that walked up and said, hey, wow, I loved it. You know, I have to tell you, and as a matter of fact, let me go into a little bit of groveling, because I have problems, and I want you to know that I am not one of those people that, you know, flattery gets you anything. As a matter of fact, I don't take flattery well. I'm here to do a job. I guess 20 years in the Marine Corps, you know, where the Marine Corps is not common. If you read, now today it's a lot different. The Marine Corps, you know, gives you golden stars and you know, pats on the back far more frequently than they did when I was in. And as a matter of fact, the one way you can tell who a brown noser was based on how many medals they had on their chest. I remember a Top T, when he retired, I mean, he didn't even have three rows of medals or, you know, ribbons on his chest. When he retired, he had, you know, seven ribbons. That was it. I think, you know, I may have had a little bit more than that. Maybe. It doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, I could go look in my closet because I've got a shadow box. But the point is that I knew other tops that, you know, did anything and everything they could to get another ribbon. I knew a guy that was stationed at the JIC. He was a gunnery sergeant at the time. He was stationed at the JIC, and he, you know, volunteered to actually take a bunch of intel products into Southwest Asia, into Desert Storm area, to the rear where all of the, you know, the intelligence processing and the, you know, command headquarters, all that stuff was. So in other words, he went on a boondoggle to, you know, the most luxurious place of the war where the elitists were, you know, kind of well protected. I mean, they don't put, you know, the headquarters right on the very front line, if you understand what I'm saying. And so he, you know, had decent treatment. It wasn't like he was sleeping in the dirt or anything when he got there, and he was there for a few days and came back. And because he was there, he got himself a ribbon because he was in the area. He was able to prove he was in the area. And I mean, that's the kind of brown nosers that existed. So when you look at people and their campaigns, you know, you have to go, well, is this person one of those that is aggrandizing? Because 9 times out of 10, the Marines that I knew and the Marines that I, you know, served with, most of them, we didn't care about what you had on your chest. There were those that did, and oh, well, what's this and what's that? And because that's what they wanted. They wanted, oh, I want to get that. And I'm going, anyway, so I don't do flattery well. As a matter of fact, one of the things that Top T taught me and others, you know, because they use the same adage, is you don't have to thank me for doing what I'm doing. The Marine Corps thanks me twice a month by paying me, and that's the thanks enough for me to do my job. And that's it. Now, if you want to help, if you want to thank me, help. If you want to thank me, then get involved and do things. That's really the thanks I need. I want people to actually, you know, be getting involved and so forth. It's nice that people, oh, thanks for coming and thanks for talking and I really enjoyed it. But, you know, don't do that, please. Please get involved. I'm begging you. We need bodies. I don't need people to tell me what a good job I'm doing. I know I make mistakes. I know I'm not perfect. So we don't need to, and people don't need to be flattered. I think it's a dangerous thing when we go down that path. Isn't flattery one of the devil's greatest tools? Anyway, so as we kind of go through this, I wanted to make this confession because The event was billed that I was going to be there and that I was going to speak at about 4 o'clock, and I would have about an hour. And then for the next hour, from 5 to 6, we would be able to have a round table. And I was thinking, okay, this is great. And then it became, I was notified that, well, we're going to have actually the COS points, presented before me. And I go, well, that's great. Then I can add that to my, my talk and my presentation. And I didn't get a chance to even talk about that to the detail, because by the time I ended up talking, it was like 6 o'clock. And there was a candidate that was there for a fundraiser. So that candidate was being curtailed by me getting up on the stage to talk, because everything went sideways. Now, I don't mean sideways in a bad way, but I mean people were up there giving talks and so forth. So what I'm trying to tell you now is I have this real, we all have our, our weaknesses, our shortcomings, or what have you. Patience is not one of my virtues. I mean, I can be patient, and I'm a lot more patient than I used to be. And my good wife, my better half, my beautiful bride, has made me far more patient than I ever was before her. But when I have expectations, I'm going to be talking, I'm going to do this, and I want to get things done, and I'm looking to get things done, all of a sudden, patience goes out the window. Now, I didn't start stomping my feet and storming around, but it bothers me, and I internalize this. And so, I was looking at my watch, it was just, and I didn't mean, or I didn't like that part of me. I don't like that. I felt really bad. I ended up apologizing. I'm saying, I'm sorry if I'm being impatient and so forth. But it affects me. And I hate that. I don't like to, have certain emotions that can actually own me and, drive me to doing things that maybe I shouldn't say or do. But anyway, so this event in ways was a tempering of my, my patience. It was a tempering of, me, but it was also, I think, a great opportunity to, have the same people in the room. And it was pretty close to what I talked about a long time ago about doing an expo, because here we had people from different walks of life, and we need to do expos like this. You need to do expos like this, where you don't necessarily need me to come up at the end to basically point out how everybody is just seeking their little piece of the pie. And instead of having a piece of the pie, let's take the whole pie by uniting and working together, right? Because we get the whole pie if we unite. United we stand, divided we fall. And everybody that wants a little piece of the pie is dividing us so that we won't even get the pie. We won't even get the piece. We may get some crumbs off that piece as we're trying to dish something up for ourselves, but we're not going to get that piece and we won't get the pie. If we're going to succeed, we must unite. We know this, and I'm telling you, as sure as I'm sitting here right now, folks, that until we demand unification, until we demand that everybody put aside their differences, their shortcomings, and as well as their self-interests, I mean, we have to put aside these things. I mean, we need to forgive other people. We need to be looking at people and saying, you really rubbed me wrong, but it doesn't matter. You're a patriot and you need to be here. We all need to be here. We need to be here now. We need to be doing this and working together now. It is that important. So, anyway, as we started going through some more of the talks, like I said, we had something for, Patriots for Prosperity or something like that, talking about education, and this guy was truly coming off. And I'm just picking up where I left off yesterday, where this gentleman was really coming across as a progressive. And I go, wow, I mean, how did this guy get in here? Now, the next speaker, who was Nate Nathaniel Deshmaker, and I think I got that right. He came, and so he is an activist working on sovereign land, Montana sovereign land, and the sovereignty movement and so forth, and great guy. And he basically, you know, his focus of his presentation was rediscovering our heritage. And it was really good because he kind of went through, I would say, common law and the fundamentals of natural law all the way back to, and we're talking back to the, you know, 14, 1500s and so forth into the 1600s, into the Glorious Revolution and so forth. And he was pointing out, you know, these rights. He read the commentaries of Blackstone and so forth. And it was just amazing. Anyway, I don't want to bleed into it. We'll be right back after these two promos. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
You know, it becomes really, really obvious when you have somebody that's representing an organization to say, you need to support us, we need your support, we need your contributions so we can do these great things regarding this one myopic issue. And if you think about it, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are, you know, bringing in money for their organizations. So there's a lot of organizations. When you look at activist organizations and how much is brought in, combining all of them, and I'm not just on the right side, we're talking billions of dollars, folks. We're talking billions. Because the abortion movement, there were all sorts of movements were from the local level to national levels that, you know, just the spectrum of all of them, they were making probably $1 billion, if not millions of dollars. I mean, over the course of several years, they were probably definitely in the $1 million on an annual basis, definitely. But my point is that when you add them all together, you know, those who are fighting school and those who are fighting, you know, the invasion, homosexual marriage, all of these myopic or moral issues or what have you, the issues du jour. When we look at what we are doing and how much we're spending, we would have more than enough money if all of that money was shifted into demanding full compliance, because all these organizations and all that money would now be consecrated and concentrated on full compliance of the Constitution. And it would solve their problem as well as everybody else's, and we would actually win. We would actually get what we want. We would get prayer back in the schools. We would be able to get people out of government that have no business wearing black robes, standing in legislatures, you know, enforcing laws, what have you. If we could work together in demanding full compliance of the Constitution, that's how much power we have. Just want you to understand this. We have that kind of power. So, anyway, as I was talking about this gentleman that was going through these, you know, rediscovering our heritage and going through this historical thing, it was kind of a nice breath of fresh air where he wasn't standing up there saying, we need your help, we need your support, and this is what we're doing, we want to do this. He was actually trying to help educate and motivate people. And this was awesome. I mean, it's kind of like what I'm doing, educating and trying to bring people together on the truth. Huge. This is huge. This is very, very important. Now, a lot of people were saying, I'm up here to presenting you the truth on this one issue. And so we had, you know, a few politicians get up and, you know, talk about, you know, the one thing that they're focused on and why you need to support them or what have you. But I'm here to tell you that what Nathaniel did, sorry for, you know, why do I struggle over names? I got to work on this. Actually, one of the things I discovered, just going down a rat hole real quick, one thing I discovered is that I have and have always had this like dyslexic problem. And so I'd never kind of realized it because it wasn't as bad as most people, you know, but I do have, like when I speak in a hurry or what have you, my mind works backwards, or I will, you know, flip things backwards and so forth, or when I'm not really thinking. And so it really comes out when I was taking the prednisone, and I'm almost completely rid of the prednisone. It takes a while when you stop taking it to get free of it, but this, it's a steroid. And so when I was under that, boy, my dyslexia really was just hard for me to control. I don't want to say control, but it would surface and it was exposing me. And I'm going, oh my gosh, you know, speak right. You're more intelligent than that. But see, here's the thing. Dyslexia has nothing to do with intelligence. It just has, you know, your brain works differently. Anyway, I'm done with that little side note. So it was a breath of fresh air sitting there listening to Nathaniel. And as I was listening, I was going, okay, this is all good. This is all good. But I need to get up there because I need to, you know, address a lot of stuff. And, you know, I actually sent a text to the guy that was running the show saying, hey, with the rest of the speakers, you know, after this certain point, I said, with the rest of the speakers you have on the schedule for me to get up there at 4 o'clock, you can only give them 6 minutes to talk. Come on. I really feel bad. I shouldn't be laughing, but, and I actually called and I apologized. And the guy goes, no big deal at all. And so, very gracious people. I love the people of these dark red states. I love the people of Wyoming, Montana, the Dakotas, and so forth. I mean, these people are genuinely kind people. They're the salt of the earth. It's not that they're humble, but they are humble. It's not that they're, you know, they're considerate and they've got good etiquette, but they are. They do. You know, it's an amalgamation. It's a combination of all sorts of qualities that we would like to see in our fellow man. It is rampant in these dark red rural states. You know, when you get into the city, the behavior and how people act and so forth, it perverts you. It perverts humanity. And so the next person that talked, I think the next person that talked was a person that talked from the John Birch Society. And so when the John Birch Society, and her name was Leah Southwell. And so she kind of covers the, you know, Colorado, that, you know, this, those central Rocky Mountains, Dakotas and so forth. So she gets around a little bit. But she, you know, was speaking regarding the convention process and the rewriting of the Constitution of Chile. And she was talking about, you know, how just wrong this really is. And I don't know about you, but it just seems to me. And so here's the question, because the next person that talked after her was Senator Tom McGilroy, actually McGilvery. And I probably mispronounced that. And I forgive me, Tom. Or Senator McGilvray. Anyway, because I'm just going to keep on struggling with names here. Both of these points was a convention of states and you know, the anti-convention of states with the John Birch Society. And I'm just going, why is it? I constantly have to ask this question. So now's the time to do this. Why have we been, you know, bullied, and why have we been badgered into a position that they really believe is a binary position? Both sides agree. Both sides confess that we are living under government tyranny. The government overreach is incredibly out of control. And both sides just truly cling to, it's either a convention to deal with it or not to deal with it that way. And I'm going, it is not binary. The fact is, the convention cannot deal with it. As a matter of fact, I just recently cited this, and I think I even pointed it out at the meeting, that Jefferson, in his book, The State of Virginia, which was a book he wrote like 3-4 years before the writing of the Constitution, he talked about the methods of basically dealing with encroachments by government. The Federalist paper was The Methods of Dealing with Encroachments, and they cited him. And in his book, he talked about two very specific processes. And Madison brought this up because he wanted to let people know that there are two separate processes if you're dealing with government encroachments or government violations of the Constitution. And it was very clear when you read through Federalist Paper 49, it's not using an Article 5 convention. Basically, the convention that was listed, and Jefferson was the one that brought this up. He says that there's two conventions, one for dealing with the amending of the Constitution. The other was for dealing with the breaches thereof. When the government breaches it, then the states actually have to convene as the parties to the compact and force the federal government into compliance. So why is it? Why is it that this has become a binary issue? Now, I have sat down and I have argued, and this is where I got in trouble with the John Birch Society. With Bliss II, the former regional director, he took offense. He took umbrage with my calling a bunch of the John Birchers that were running his page on Facebook. I called them imbeciles. And they complained, oh, this guy called us a bunch of imbeciles, you know, because they knew I knew him and they wanted him to, you know, to protect them from these harsh words. The reason I did that, and this is important, the reason I did that was we were actually talking about this part of the 49th Federalist Paper, and that there were two specific separate processes that Jefferson talked about as far as conventions. Because I was using this C word, they said, if you're supporting a convention, then you're supporting the con. And I go, don't you understand? Jefferson was calling a convention for dealing with the breaches, not a convention of an Article 5 convention. He actually provided clarity that there is actually a separate convention in his mind and paradigm. You telling him that it can only be a con? And they, every time they kept on coming back to me, their responses were very, they weren't addressing the information I was providing. They just kept on pointing their finger. You're for a con, like a bunch of imbeciles. And I'm sorry.
you know, if you quack like a duck, I'm going to call you a duck. And so I called them out as imbeciles, and they took offense. So anyway, when we come back, I will talk more about, you know, the problem with both of the organizations. And I actually think we have better latitude with the COS. We'll be right back. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so, excuse me. So, in looking at, you know, the big picture, because obviously, when the Constitution was being violated in 1798 by the Alien Sedition Acts, Madison and Jefferson clearly did not submit a petition for convening a convention to amend the Constitution. And so this is what Meckler and the Convention of State folks are trying to do. They're trying to actually, you know, they're not following Madison and Jefferson's example. This is my point. They're actually trying to assume that a convention of states, and they claim that the convention of states is the only way in dealing with breaches, and absolutely not. It was never the tool. As a matter of fact, constitutionally, it was defined in the ratification because we just covered this, that it was defined as the mechanism of dealing with deficiencies with the Constitution. In other words, something wasn't working in the Constitution, or if the federal government needed more power, or if you needed to take power away. None of these three issues are in play here, because the reason why they want to convene a convention is for dealing with encroachments and overreach. The only other mechanism or the only other application that can occur in a convention would be the rewriting of the Constitution, because clearly they can, that's what an amendment is. Amending is not just making a minor change, it can be a wholesale change. And rewriting the Constitution, there's no constraints or limitations to what you and how you amend. And so the whole point is, and the John Birch Society is right when they can, because, you know, the Convention of State folks, oh no, we're only going to amend this part and this part. Well then, so here's the thing. Every amendment that we have in the Constitution today, almost all of them came from the states. Well, if that's the case, and the states really want to have a convention,
why is it that the states aren't identifying the amendments? So here's the conversation that really needs to occur. We need to actually have these folks that are, you know, champions for the convention states literally start writing out these amendments that they want and they think that they need. Because now we can start discussing the merits of it. Because right now, the convention of states folks has been able to get away with give us a blank check mentality. And there have been a plenty of, I'll just say, imbeciles at the state level that have been granting these petitions to give the convention of state folks a blank check. I don't like that. Would you write a blank check? I wouldn't. I wouldn't trust these folks. Now, when you looked at the convention, the original convention of the Constitution, there was a huge laundry list that they were identifying. They had already written many amendments, and many of those amendments literally were worked into the Constitution. They had a laundry list of them, folks. That's a big difference between then and today. Obviously, the John Bircher, Leah, she kind of went down this path that the early convention was a runaway convention when she was wrong. She's clearly wrong because they settled this argument. We covered this with the ratification debates. They went through the convention determining whether it was out of scope or in scope, and each state that actually, you know, I'll use the words ardently and vigorously debated the new Constitution. The Federalists or the Anti-Federalists did everything they could to say, we can't do this. We've got to scuttle this whole thing because they were out of scope. And it was forced to a vote in Virginia and other states where they said, you know what, we have to decide whether they were in scope or out of scope. And every state actually elected when they had to choose whether they were in scope or out of scope. Every state agreed that they were in scope. And when I say by that by a showing of votes, obviously the Anti-Federalists were doing everything they could to, you know, to protect their little cabal at the state level instead of surrendering these few little powers of taxation, you know, and trade, because, you know, they weren't even abiding by the original Articles of Confederation. So Don't talk sideways about history and tell me that it's the truth. Anyway, so when we look at the Convention of States and the John Birch Society's positions, what really kills me is nobody is there poking both of them, because where are they in leading? The John Birch Society is leading the charge against the Convention of States, and so they all agree. They agree that the federal government is going down this path, and they're claiming nullification. They're claiming that we need to do nullification. This is why we have to actually cover this. This is why we have to cover Republic Review and how dangerous nullification is. Nullification is equally as dangerous as the Convention of States. And the John Birch Society is not going to tell you that. The 10th Amendment Center will not tell you that. I will tell you that because I can prove it. I can use Madison's words and I can help you understand in the big picture how these things are absolutely dangerous for our republic. Going back and forth. I mean, when we look at the convention, folks, I am here to tell you, as we were going into break, I think we have a better position with the convention folks in actually breaking away from just focusing on the convention, because I proved and I actually had the conversation and he agreed with me that he's right. You know, he does support the Constitution, because clearly, don't tell a convention state folk person who's supporting the convention of states that they don't believe in supporting the Constitution, because that's actually in the Constitution. As I pointed out to him and everybody there, yeah, that's in the Constitution, which, oh, by the way, who has jurisdiction over it? Most people think it's the states, but it clearly states in Article 3 that all things arising under this Constitution, which the convention is, the federal government has full jurisdiction. So in other words, if all of a sudden there's, you know, it goes awry or the federal government seizes control, the federal government has jurisdiction to seize control. Whether anybody says, oh, well, no, you know, that is the truth. they don't have authority and jurisdiction to seize control of transportation of properties within the state and land within the state and state resources, or selling, you know, state land to foreigners. I could go on and on and on with all the things that they don't have jurisdiction over that they're controlling today. But this is in the Constitution. They actually do have control over this, and they will gain control over it. And I'm amazed that nobody brings this up. I'm amazed that nobody points out how dangerous this is, because I think it actually ends the argument that say, you know what? Maybe we should be focusing on having a discussion of what the amendments really need to be, because I'll give you one recommendation for an amendment. We need to remove the ability of the states to actually create a new constitution. In other words, make it impossible for them to actually do anything that would allow the states to run away and rewrite the Constitution. I believe that the Constitution we have is the end results of the divine hand of providence in inspiring us into a perfect form of government. The only reason it wasn't perfect is because the men involved, when you really look at, and I tell you, I've said this before, when you look at the body of government and how every person in this government, from the citizens to the president, we all have a responsibility to support the Constitution and act as an immune system. The problem is that we've been infected by a virus, by a bacterial infection that has perverted people into attacking and actually attacking the Constitution. And the only reason they're in this position and successful in this process of destroying our republic is because we have failed to engage our immune system. We are not doing what we have to do as citizens. So at the very end of this whole presentation in Montana, I'm going to wrap up because I've got a minute left. At the very end of this presentation, I pointed out the whole power of the First Amendment petition. And I actually talked about this before, and I wrapped up in saying we have the right. We are the most important part of the immune system of the body of government. And the actual mechanism that is in the Constitution regarding overreach or violations of the Constitution is not Article 5, but it is the First Amendment petition. So don't tell me you're really supporting the Constitution when it comes to government overreach if you're not using the First Amendment petition for the redress of grievances. And so I said, and I have three petitions here. And so we had these three petitions. I kind of gave a summary view of what each of these petitions were. And I asked everybody, please sign these petitions. Everybody signed. And back to this conversation of having this conversation with somebody else that was doing the two movies and everything else that I said earlier, how they, you know, got really disappointed because nobody did anything. I got everybody to sign these petitions. If you go in there empty-handed, then how can anybody do anything? But if you go and you give them something, you can show them something and say, wow, this is just awesome. Now they can actually download these things. What we're trying to do, and the whole point is, when you get people to sign these things, you have to ask them, would you please help us get more signatures? Would you please help us grow this movement? Will you please help us step up and help us, you know, move this ball down the road? Anyway, folks, it's all about doing what we need to do. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling
866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com for custom pricing.